show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Bouncing ball, Moustakas, fair ball. Sets, throws, Royals win it. Kansas City, you've got a World Series.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Ladies and gentlemen, it has been a few weeks, I think, since we've recorded last. Been busy, and, you know, shit happens. It's life. But yep, we're here to talk Royals. There's an awful, awful lot to talk about. But first, of course, as always, I am your host, Jeff Herr, and with me, the globetrotting Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing this evening?
Globetrotting is a good word for it. I've just, like, the last 2 months have just been, like, all over the place. Most of the time it's been to Kansas City, but, like, just all over the place. It's just crazy.
It's just been really tough for us to kind of find a schedule that works between just, I've been really busy at work and then with, you know, just the normal trials and tribulations of owning a home and all that kind of stuff. You just get so much stuff going on. And same deal with you and work, and you've been going around, running around a lot of different stuff. So important thing is we're here now, though.
Yeah, we found the time, which is cool. So, I mean,
it is cool. And we have plenty of things to talk about. First thing I want to talk about, Mike, if you'll indulge me here.
All right.
Is so I went to the game on Tuesday night, right? T-shirt Tuesday. I was really pumped to get my Forever Royal t-shirt, but these people are vultures out there. And they were completely gone by the time I was only there like 40 minutes early or something. And they were just, it's not even like you could see the boxes there where they once were. They're just everything just completely gone. People probably just ripped the boxes to shreds, hoping there'd be some left in there. It's funny to think about how far we've come. A Tuesday night in May, June, where the first 10,000 get a t-shirt. I mean, there was a time when you had to wonder if there'd be even 10,000 total. Yeah. And there was roughly 30,000 there that night. So just a little perspective on how far this organization has come, at least in terms of fan attendance. And as a side note, before we get into the topic I really want to talk about, I think it's unbelievably awesome because two things have happened. One, the Royals always said that if they got good and the fans showed up, that they would pump more money into the team. And the fans always said, well, if the Royals get good, more people will show up. So it was kind of a chicken and the egg thing, you know, which one's going to happen first type of deal. And the Royals got good and people have started showing up and they put more money into the team. So everyone's held up to their end of the bargain and it's made for an incredibly fun season so far. We're almost at exactly, if you would factor in some of the postponed games that'll be played later, we'd be pretty much at the exact 1/3 spot of the season. The Royals are in first place. Third best record in all of baseball. Really phenomenal stuff. But despite all that, the Royals have been on a slight little bit of a downturn lately. And I brought up the game Tuesday night, not only because I was there, but because there was a controversial call in the eighth inning. Wade Davis, who I'm going to wear this one for Royals Nation here because my wife and I were there and I leaned over to my wife and I said, I'm probably jinxing him here. But Wade Davis has the second longest scoreless inning streak in all of baseball. And lo and behold, no more than 10 minutes later, that first run comes on through. However,
yep, that's yours. That,
that's all me. So I'll take it. But that run would not have come through had the right call been made. So I cannot remember. I can't remember who it was. Chisenhall?
I think it's Jose Ramirez.
That's it. It was Jose Ramirez. Yep. So Ramirez hits the ball. It was second base, right? And they were trying to turn the double play. And the throw to first came in as a tight play, as they often are on double plays. And the initial call was that he was safe. Looked out to me. I was, you know, up in the field – field view box, the high view box or whatever up on the upper deck, but it still mm-hmm. looked like it was out to me. And then they challenged it, showed the replay, super slow-mo, looked out, everyone started to kind of cheer, started to get a little uplifted because they were hopefully getting out of a little bit of a jam there. No, they did not overturn the call after about 3 minutes of deliberation. It was very, very confusing. And then MLB comes out the next day, which as we're recording this was yesterday, but Wednesday. And they said, hey, we screwed up. We sorry. And
my bad.
They came up with something that sounds like a little bit of BS to me, but you know, whatever, I suppose it happens. They say that there was a very rare circumstance where it was a technical issue in which the super slow-mo replay that clearly showed that Jose Ramirez was out did not get to New York, which it befuddles me why they don't just review it. And I mean, because the whole reason why instant replay has kind of swept American League sports because the NFL. The NFL was the first one to institute it. They've done it the best, and it works really well. You know, people complain, whatever, but it works really well for what it's supposed to accomplish, which is get the right call. And more often than not, it does, and especially the egregious ones. Now, what the NFL does is they review it there. They have a correspondent in New York, but they review it there. The referee there can look at the play, that he can talk to the person in New York, but he's the one looking at the play. He's got the final decision. In baseball, the guys just stand out there like a couple of idiots on the headset, as probably get like freaking elevator music playing, and they're just waiting for whoever the hell it is in New York to make this call. And apparently there was some sort of technical snafu where they didn't get, you know, they couldn't flip over to Fox Sports and see the freeze frame, right. I guess. But whatever the reason is, they didn't get the proper replay, and they made an incorrect decision, and they came out and they apologized for it. And, you know, I suppose if that's truly the reason, you know, I heard this opinion on the radio that I agree, at least it's not that they saw it and they legitimately thought it was the right call, because it clearly wasn't, you know?
Right.
And so at least that's because then you have to wonder, like, then it's an issue of incompetence. So, but then that's also, you also wonder if it's does that mean that the didn't get the right replay is just a cover up? But as those events unfolded, I mean, what were you thinking on that? Like, first of all, what was it like on I couldn't hear what, you know, obviously I didn't hear what the announcers were saying on TV and everything and how they reacted to the call. But I mean, just from your perspective, what was it like?
Well, I was coaching, but I ended up, I was able to
see. Oh, so you weren't watching the game?
Yeah, okay. I didn't see the game, but I saw plenty of the replay of it. And it was absolutely an out. I mean, it was close. It was like, you know, one frame. It was like, okay, his spike wasn't on the base, but the ball's in Hosmer's glove. It was very clearly an out. What I heard after the game was Ryan LaFever was really, really fired up about it. And he kept going
on the radio today. And yeah, he seemed pretty fired up.
But yeah. And he was bringing up the idea of like, okay, it's a guy who's, you know, like you said, he's in New York. He's just there on monitor. He's not there in front of the crowds. He's not there watching the play live the first time and then seeing a replay of what he saw, you know, in front of him. It's just some guy out there. And he threw up the theory that maybe they're trying to make themselves look a little better by, you know, upholding more calls. It's tough because there's affirming the call, and then there's also like there's not enough evidence to overturn it, which are completely different.
It's a thin line, but it's an important distinction.
Yeah, and so it something like that, then yeah, that is that's not good. That's, you know, tampering with some of the integrity of the game, because if you're making a decision not because it's the right call or the right result of the play, but because you want to protect how your guy looks, that's not good. And that's obviously something that I think the league would be very interested in protecting and looking into. Right. So I guess I kind of take him at their word as a technical thing, because there is no way you could look at that and say that's a safe call.
You wouldn't think.
You can't. So if that's the case, though, that also shows one of the problems of replay is that, okay, why is that a technical problem? I mean,
why is that even a possibility?
Right. I mean, it's like the viewer at home shouldn't have better technology and better access to camera angles and everything than what the people who need to be monitoring these things have. It's crazy. It's like you said, why can't they just turn the TV on to the actual game? I mean, why would they not do that? And I think, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think in the NFL, don't they access any camera that's on in the stadium from any feed?
I believe that's a requirement, is that the truck operators for, you know, CBS or whoever's there in the game has to make those available.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And
it
so
it wasn't always like that. They had to kind of learn that. But by the time MLB is implemented, that was already in place for the NFL.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it makes sense to do that. It makes to have any possible camera in the stadium available for someone to look at. And so, you know, I just don't understand how it's just such a wisdom. And they're trying to, you know, it's only the second year of it. They're trying to get it worked out so that, you know, there aren't too many delays. But it's, you know, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's the best system to do things. Just, you know, if,
yeah,
like, why you could throw a vine onto Twitter in, you know, 3 seconds after the play is over and review it that way. I mean, you shouldn't be able to do this with a smartphone you got for $20 at Walmart and have these guys at the hub in New York and being unable to see the same thing that I can see sitting on my couch because I'm not making the decision. And, you know, as it turned out, it was a pretty big decision. It ended up leading to, you know, it's one fewer out, leads to a run later on, you know, and the Royals ended up losing the game. And I wouldn't say because of that, but it was a factor in changing the score of the game later in the inning. So, I mean, it's important to get it right. And I think they usually do. But, you know, when you get it wrong, it seems like they've got it very wrong. And I think that shows they're able to at least, I guess, learn some of the traps, some of the problems with the system. And, you know, hopefully they'll continue to work them out and these things won't happen.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's – it was definitely a close play. And I don't fault the umpire. Was it Davidson, Bob Davidson?
I think that's right, yeah, who called him safe. Like,
yeah, so I don't fault him for that at all because it was a super close play, and they have an incredibly tough job. But the mm-hmm. whole point of replay, and this kind of goes to the point you brought up about, you know, maybe they're trying to make their guys look better by not overturning close calls. Like, oh, it was the correct call all along, so why would we overturn it? Right. That's not how this was structured. That's not how the whole purpose behind instant replay. It was designed so that instead of just wearing the error, you know, and being the Don Deekingers of the world or the guy that God, I cannot remember the name of the umpire that effed up the perfect game a couple years ago that led to this
Jim
whole
Joyce.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That led to this whole instant replay in the first place. So instead of having to wear that, you have an opportunity to correct it and not be haunted for the rest of your career as the guy that didn't make the one call.
Right.
And, you know, it seems like it should be something where the umpires that are at the game can look at it and say, oh, okay, you know, the angle I had, it wasn't quite as easy to see that. I didn't, you know, I can correct that mistake as opposed to letting it go and letting somebody else make the decision because they're just as inclined to, you know, whatever, you know, it wasn't my call, look close, don't have all the feeds, you know, blah, blah,
right,
blah.
Let's just call it.
Yeah. And then, the technical aspect, you know, it's definitely perplexing why they would have it done in New York. I've never thought that was a good idea because ultimately what's got to happen then is exactly what caused the problem in the first place. You've got whatever feed they require. Certainly there's some sort of requirement that whoever's broadcasting the game has the cameras and they have to provide some sort of feed to New York. And there's got to be some method of doing that. So you're introducing multiple problems because then you've got to get the feed, send it to New York. So then MLB and the Royals are at the, and the Indians in this case are at the mercy of internet providers that have nothing to do with anything in this baseball game, except providing the cables to get the internet or to get this data where it needs to go. So you've introduced a third party right there that is completely
that you don't have control over.
Yes. Whereas, you know, there's the broadcast feed, but all the other cameras are on closed circuit. So there's a truck out there that everything flows through, that runs through all of it. They have access to all the cameras, all the angles, and they can queue up a replay as quickly as they need from any camera they need, whenever. I mean, think about how quickly they pull up replays on the when they air the games.
Yeah.
So it makes more sense to have a station there like the NFL does, so you can go look at it and make the determination yourself, instead of having to worry about, okay, we got to wait for the guy, we got to call the guy in New York, he's got to, you know, wipe the jelly donut off his tie and get the queue up the right replay, and then, you know, and then there's got to be somebody on the receiving end that's able to compile all the different views, and they're just, you're introducing too many possibilities for error into the situation. So hopefully, you know, and the Royals aren't the only one to have this issue. Other teams have been screwed like this before as well.
Yeah.
So hopefully they can take this as a learning opportunity and move along. But
that all being said, we're probably not talking about a replay if the Royals could score more than one run most of the time.
Exactly, which is what I was about to just say, that as much as I just kind of wanted to talk about that because I had some thoughts on replay in general. But overall, you know, as you said, that was a factor, but if the Royals had scored more runs, or if Infante hadn't biffed that second double play opportunity, then it'd be a moot point, and you wouldn't mm-hmm. you wouldn't have to worry about it. The MLB probably wouldn't even have issued an apology.
Right.
But they did, and that's where we are. But that game kind of was a sort of a microcosm of some of the problems that the Royals have been having. So they started the season, everything was going so well, and you could tell, we talked about it on the show, the plate approach was what was so stark and how different it was in a good way. And now the last week or so, it seems to have been reverting back to kind of the old Royals, if you will, back to May of last year, when everything was just they were losing to the Astros and things were in terrible shape. I mean, have you noticed it as much as I feel like I have, that they've just kind of as they slowly started to sink into a slide, it just got worse and worse, and they've kind of slowly devolved back, not necessarily the whole way. They're not as bad as they were, but they're not the same approach they were. I mean, you get that same feeling?
Yeah, I mean, you look at what they've done as far as just striking out lately. I mean, they've been striking out a lot more in the last week or so than they typically had. And this is a team that's built on making contact. I mean, that's the way that they approach the game. And so, you know, when you get, I mean, like last night against Kluber, they struck out 9 times. That's warranted. Corey Kluber is just an amazing strikeout pitcher. But,
right.
You know, they're striking out like a third of the times they come up. And it's just like, that's not the way the Royals offense works. You know, they want to get the ball in there. They want to make the defense move. Pretty much any defense they face is going to be a worse defense than their own. So it's just, you know, make those guys make the play. But then you get like Sal Perez, who, you know, his approach is pretty notoriously poor. Lorenzo Cain has been chasing a little bit more. Omar Infante is chasing things out of the zone, and he's striking out a lot more. Hunter Samuels, Pine Tar Press, had a really good piece on just some of the things that he's done this year compared to others, and how he's making less contact, but he's also swinging at worse pitches, which is always like just a bad thing because
Pretty you know, bad combination there.
I guess if you're swinging at worse pitches, it's okay if you don't make the contact because you're not making poor contact, but he's doing a little bit of everything there. So that's tough. Alex Gordon he's been very streaky. You know, Eric Hosmer's kind of come back to earth a little bit. Moustakas he's still been pretty good. But, I mean, guys like Infante have been, he's just a black hole. I mean, he's in Getz level. He's in Getz territory as far as his numbers, and it's really confusing that the Royals aren't, you know, even talking more about playing Christian Colon a little bit more, or, you know, doing something different, just because Infante's been so bad at the plate. I mean, he's not getting on base, he's not hitting the ball, and he's not hitting the ball hard when he does make contact. So it's really kind of confusing what's keeping him in the lineup when the Royals could really use some help from, you know, somebody who's playing pretty well like Christian Colon. So, yeah. You know, but that's a big deal. You know, the last 8 games, going into Thursday, the Royals had scored one run in only one run in five of those eight. And you're not going to win games doing that. You know, the pitching hasn't been that good. It's been better in some stretches, but, you know, it's mostly inconsistent. One of those games, they scored two runs and still lost that one. And then they've scored eight runs and four runs, and they did win those. So it's pretty telling what the problem is. It's the offense. And if you're putting a guy who's, you know, 50% of an average hitter, that's not really a good way to go.
Yeah, you know, and you heard my dog. She is also not an Omar Infante fan.
Yeah,
right now.
Well, I mean, and I like that contract. I like the signing. Maybe not the contract itself. I like the signing when they got him, because I thought that he was going to be filling a big hole that's been a weakness for years and years. But you know, he's just not doing it.
Even if he was 80 or 90% of his last couple of years in Detroit, I guess only a couple of years in Detroit, but you know, even if he was 80 to 90% of those solid years, he was still going to be a valuable player to this team. But he's hardly been half the player he was offensively speaking,
right?
In Detroit, and he's become a huge liability. Even when things were going well for the Royals as a whole, things were going terrible for him. And you know, it. You think we give the Royals a ton of credit for what they've been able to do, and you know, we've criticized the Royals a lot over the years.
Plenty.
And a lot of it has been warranted, and we've praised them recently because it's been warranted. However, the Omar Infante situation, especially as it continues to develop in the sense that he doesn't seem to be improving, maybe even getting worse, and how the Royals are reacting to it, it feels like the 2010 Royals, you know, where, hey, this guy was a big free agent signing. He's important to this team. We signed him to play. He's going to play.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of that old Royals, if you will. We have our mind made up about a guy. He is this person, whether the numbers show it or not, whether our eyes can see it or not. He is this person because that's what we signed. That's what we're paying money for. So he's damn well going to be that person. Doesn't always work out that way. You know, I mean, you just sometimes you have to bite the bullet. I'm not saying cut Omar Infante. I think he's still got some value to this team.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you've got to get him out of there. You've got to put someone like Christian Colon in there. And this isn't, you know, beating the drum for Johnny Giovitella type of thing where,
right,
you know, oh, Christian Colon's going to be an everyday player. He just needs a chance. It's just that he's better than Omar Infante right now, and the Royals don't have the time to waste. They need to put a player. They need to min-max every position they can. Minimize the possibility for a bad occurrence and maximize the possibility for a good occurrence. Christian Colon right now on both offense and defense fills both of those to a greater degree than Omar Infante does. It's quite simple. And, you know, the Royals don't seem to see it that way. And hopefully it's something that will change in the near future, because
he's got to turn it around. The thing that I was thinking about a little earlier today was that, you know, it's June 4th and the trade deadline is less than 2 months away now. So the Royals, you know, when they're looking at what are the holes that they need to fill, you know, they don't know if second base is one right now. Like if Colon can handle that position every day, this is the time to learn if he can do it or not. And then if he can, then, you know, okay, we've got Colon, we have Infante as backup. We can always, you know, use Infante as a utility guy, or we can use Infante at second and continue with Colon as a utility guy. And so you get to that point where, okay, maybe Colon can handle it, and now you don't have to go look for a second baseman. Now those prospects you might have been trading off to get peace can be used somewhere. If nothing else, it's you know, fewer phone calls. You know, you don't have to go find a second baseman. You don't have to take on, you know, let's say Brandon Phillips or something, just to be sure that you have a second baseman who can hit the ball a little bit. So that's, you know, if in 3 weeks he can't do it, then okay, then you kind of figured it out, and you can take a look at what's out on the trade market. But, you know, it's important to at least be sure that Colon can't do it every day.
Yeah.
Right now. I mean, I think he's still going to be the utility guy no matter what. unless they go and actually get somebody significant. But I mean, there's not a lot to really lose in trying to see if he can handle it. You know, if you give him 2 weeks and see what he does, maybe it picks up everything up. I don't know, but
yeah,
you know, Infante is just struggling so much that it's tough to justify him being in the lineup.
Yeah, and you know, we don't know a ton about Christian Colon just because of the limited amount of time we've seen him play, but what we do, I think we've seen enough to know that as bad as he could be, as good or bad as he could be, he can't be any worse than Omar Infante is right now. I am confident in saying that. So if that's your situation and you think there's a possibility that he could be better right now, it doesn't have to be the long-term solution, but you know, if Omar can take some time off and maybe heal up and figure things out, and maybe he comes back a different player, you know, the year and a third that we've seen from him wouldn't suggest that's the case, but you never know. Yeah. Crazier things have happened. So
he's also not been healthy for pretty much all of it. So, yeah. I mean,
and that's a completely different topic of, you know, why did the Royals even allow him to start the season? They should have had him get surgery because he needs it.
Yeah. And just it's the elbow thing has been a thing since spring training of 2014. And it seemed like at the end of the year, they could have went and had some kind of correction and, you know, gone in and cleaned it up. And he'd feasibly be back and healthy, or at least fully healthy from at least the elbow wouldn't be an issue at this age. Maybe he's doing the same thing. You know, I don't know, but maybe that health makes him a better hitter because he can use all of his arms without pain, without restriction. So I think that's definitely an issue with him, is that there's got to be health things too. He's also, you know, into his 30s, and you know, that's when guys start to age, and some guys can age faster than others. And so all that together, well, yeah, I mean, it sure doesn't seem like Infante is a long-term guy, but he's signed for the next 2.5 years. So and maybe that's why he's playing. Maybe that's why, because they have to justify it. But at a certain point, you've got to get, you know, your best guys out there. This isn't 2011 where you're trying to just get through and make these guys get comfortable as big leaguers. This is, you know, they're 50 games into the season as defending AL champs. I mean, the point now is to get back to where they were last year and finish the job. So, you know, you can't sit there and give away at bats day after day after day and be successful enough, or you shouldn't be, and get back to where you want to be.
And there's nothing to justify anymore, you know? I mean, if you – it's not as though the Royals, you know, 2008 or 9 when they signed, you know, Mike Jacobs, and it's, hey – or, you know, Jose Guillen, and it's like, hey, we have to – you know, the Royals are losing. They're 20 games under 500, so we've got to keep him in there so he can hit a lot of home runs and say, well, hey, at least this signing worked out even though the team isn't very good. Well, you don't have to do that anymore. The team is good. The Royals are a good team. So if you're going to – you know, if David Glass is going to come down and say, I don't know, maybe this is the kind of owner he is. I don't know. But if he's going to come down and say to Dayton Moore, hey, why isn't Omar Infante playing? I'm paying him $8 million a year. He needs to be on the field. You know, the only justification that Dayton Moore needs is to say, hey, we're 10 games over 500 right now. You know, I mean,
right.
The money that you're paying Omar Infante, whether he sits on the bench or whether he's out in the field, and the fact that the team is winning, regardless of what Omar Infante does, is more money in his pocket. There's no justification that needs to be made. And the only thing it can boil down to at this point is some sort of sense of pride of, hey, we chose him because he's got talent. He's going to show it to us. He needs to. We got to leave him out there. I mean, maybe. I don't know. It's. I mean, you could see decisions like this when the Royals were, you know, 62 and 100. You could be like, whatever. You know, I get it.
Right. In the grand scheme of things, what does it matter if Jose Guillen's playing, you know, every day?
Exactly.
Because the Royals weren't him anyway.
Yeah, but when every game matters, and I mean, last year, you know, they were the Royals, they were the wild card team, and you know, they were the fourth wild card, so the true wild card, if you will. But You know, they were a game behind Detroit. They could have, as exciting as that wild card game was, I still would have rather not had to play it.
Right.
And they could have not played it if they would have beaten Detroit one more time in one game. So that just shows the importance of one game, you know? So if over the course of a season, all these little things that Omar Infante does add up to one game, and they either miss the playoffs by a game, or they have to go the wild card again, or they, you know, for whatever, something else happens because of one game, you can look at that and say, we could have put ourselves in a better opportunity had we not stuck with what we knew wasn't working.
Yeah, it just seems like the sense of urgency would be a little bit greater. But like I said, they're 10 games up, they're in first place, and they're doing it with Omar Infante. So how bad can he be, I guess? But it just seems like, you know, if there is an option to be better there, then why not take that option?
Yeah, and
just that seems sensible to me.
And before at the beginning of the season, it was you could get over it because everyone else was doing so well. I mean, I've got the numbers pulled up here. So in April, March, as a team, the Royals had an 812 OPS and a 450 slugging, 362 on base as a team. This is a Royals team, by the way, with a 362 on base. So when you're going that well, it doesn't matter. You know, Omar Infante can stink it up, but when you got eight other people that are just on point, then it doesn't seem like as big of a deal. It's, we'll give him time to come around. But when you're into May and now you're as a team, you're hitting 253 with a 688 OPS. On base percentage is down below 300 at 297 for the month of May. Then it starts to become much more apparent. And you have to kind of think you got to do something, you know, but
seems to make sense to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sold. It's just, and maybe Infante can turn it around. He had stretches last year where he was pretty good, but overall just wasn't, you know, he has hit some doubles, but the thing is just like, he's in Chris Getz level of OPS. He's just not producing. And the thing is, he doesn't have things like Chris Getz's speed. At least Getz, you know, could pinch run or could steal a base if he got on. And Infante just doesn't have that kind of speed. And so, you know, he can basically produce, well, I guess, with his glove. I mean, he's...
Well, that's the thing.
It's just like, where are you going to get it from? At least specialize in something.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, if he can't... As bad as he was at the plate last year, you know, he wasn't a liability with his glove. I wouldn't say that he was... you know, very great or even very good for second base, but he was solid. You know, he made the plays you needed to make. He made some pretty good ones, and you know, didn't make too many mistakes. But now you've seen him kind of make a few mistakes lately, Tuesday being a pretty glaring one.
Yeah,
and then it becomes an issue if he can't even give you the defense, which is what the team relies on even more. Then he's really giving you nothing, and you need to, you might need to move on in terms of how you, not necessarily to get rid of Omar completely, but move on for the short term future.
Yep. I will give him credit. Last night there was a moment where Michael Bourne was on first with nobody, or he was on third with nobody out. There's a runner on first.
Yeah, I know what you're talking
about. The comebacker to Jason Vargas looks born back. He throws it to Infante at second, who also looks born back and continues onto the double play. That was a really good play.
That was a fantastic play.
So I'm not
really,
gonna
really tough.
Yeah, play. I mean that's heads up. That's savvy. That was really well done. So I mean he's capable over there. It's just he's got to be better than capable. He can't just be an average guy. He's got to be excellent.
If he doesn't give you that on every single play, then it's not going to even come close to making up for what he lacks on the offensive side. But to move more towards the team overall, which is what's making Omar's deficiencies more apparent, I kind of mentioned some of the stats on how the team has a lot of it is regression, but I would even say that a lot of people are slumping at this point.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, just to kind of reiterate, there in May, they had a 688 OPS, 392 slugging, which actually, that's not bad. If you can hover around 400 slugging as a team, you're not going to be in too bad a shape, because they've actually hit more home runs in May than they did in March and April, and more triples and more doubles. They just don't have as many hits or RBIs. So seems kind of odd that it all kind of works out that way.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, numbers don't lie. But interesting, though, the BABIP as a team is, it was 346 March, April, and is 282 in May. Neither of those strike me, and statistically speaking, neither of them are sustainable, especially as a team, for a full season. You know, typically,
that 346 pretty, that for a whole month for a whole team, that's pretty crazy,
pretty nuts. And then, because I'm gonna pull this up here, we're gonna see, I want to see what the Royals BABIP for the whole season was last year. Let's check this out. This will be an interesting exercise. I would feel like it would be pretty
good, because you've got Kane and Escobar.
That's the Royals game. That's what they do.
Yeah. But, you know, I wonder, you know, if that could indicate if their BABIP's going down, that's usually fewer line drives. They're a ground ball team anyway. So more ground balls, which are, you know, hits less often. So that would make complete sense. And, you know, just anecdotally looking and watching the games, that seems about right.
So they were 302 BABIP for all of 2014, which is pretty consistent, statistically speaking.
Yeah.
Most players are going to hover around a 300. So the Royals make an awful lot of contact. And, you know, that part of that is, I'm going to tell you why I'm not exactly worried about any sort of a slump. I don't think the Royals, this, like we said, this 346, that's just, it's in unsustainable.
It wasn't
no matter which way you slice it. We all knew that.
Yeah.
But it's another one of those scenarios where they're not as good as their best, but they're not as bad as their worst either. So they're not what they've been the last couple weeks. And especially, you know, when you look at, like, the last 2 weeks, I mean, they've been, let's see, they've had a 271 BABIP as a team and 222 batting average. So, you know, in the last week, it's been even worse. So, but here's what I'm going to say. The Royals, we all know, and we've talked about it a lot on the show, that they're a contact-driven team. They're one of the hardest teams to strike out, but not because they walk and they have a good plate approach, even though that's improved. Is because they make so much contact. The Giants play that game too. That's why it was such a kind of back and forth World Series, and why the Giants have had so much playoff success. Honestly, if you really think about it, you know, they, besides their, you know, Tim or Madison Bumgarner and,
right,
and
all their Terminator pitching, starting pitching,
but you know, offensively they play the same game as the Royals. They're a bunch of hackers. They make a lot of contact, and it. You know, that's the Royals game. That's the game they want to play, because the more chances you have of putting the ball in the field, the more chances you have a bloop that drops, the more chances somebody has an error, the more chances, you know, any multitude of things can happen. And the Royals exacerbate that by being as fast and aggressive as they are on the base paths. So, you know, that is their recipe for success. The flip side of that is, I guess you'd call it streakiness. You know, it's just the law of averages, if you will. I don't think the Royals are ever going to be a team that sustains a 300 BABIP for an extended period of time. It's going to be your high highs and, you know, somewhat lower lows, because when you rely on contact and not on, you know, walks and whatever to get on base, then you're putting yourself, as much as you're increasing the opportunities for something good to happen, you know, the odds are something good doesn't happen, just because baseball is 70% failure, you know, and that's just the nature of the game. So sometimes that skews and you have a few weeks or a month where you're at 90% failure, as opposed to the other times where you're at 50%, and it all evens out to be, you know, a wash in the end where you're about where you should be. So right now, I just think they're in one of those slight downturns. And last night's game against Corey Kluber, they kind of woke up a little bit against one of the better pitchers in baseball. And hopefully they can propel that going forward. I mean, what do you see this as some any situation for genuine concern?
I mean, it's not like they've stopped putting it in play, and you know, I mean, they struck out a little bit, but I mean, teams will go through that. You know, you get a run of pitchers who are on, you get a couple guys who are just their timing's off. It can happen, even if you're a heavily contact oriented team. The same guys are out there. I mean, their profiles are pretty well known at this point. You know what they're going to do. And then you have kind of the added bonus of Moustakas with the new approach and Hosmer, who's been hitting pretty well for the most part. So I'm not really worried. It's you know, one of those downturns. Every team goes through them. You know, every team ends up going through a stretch where they lose 5 out of 6 or they just don't score for a while. I mean, you look at the Yankees. The Yankees had lost like 10 out of 11 games, and then they lit up Jeremy Guthrie. So, I mean, I think
look at Detroit right now. They've lost, six in a row?
Seven in a row now.
Seven.
And it's just like
two games above 500.
Yeah, you get on hot streaks, you get on low streaks. But we're 50 games into the season, and there's 112 games left. So there's a lot of time for things to even out. And I think long-term, over the course of the season, it's going to be okay. They're not going to be a team that gets everything out of their guys because they're not an on-base team and they don't hit home runs. It's going to be pretty similar to last year. But if you've got two guys in Hosmer and Moustakas who are hitting well relative to last year, well, then you get a little bit extra. So I think they'll be more productive overall. But I just don't think you can count on them. You know, I don't think they're going to be what they were in April. And I don't think they're going to be what they were at the end of May. It's going to be, like you said, one of those things that just evens out. I mean, they put the ball in play so much. I think they're going to get a lot of hits. And that's just going to have to act and stand in as their kind of a walk. You know, singles are just going to have to be their walk. Yeah. And maybe they play it into something bigger. So, you know, I'm not too worried about the offense. I'm not encouraged by it. But
and they actually... I mean, they've actually underperformed their Pythagorean win loss. Based on that, they're a 31-19 team, and they're 30-20 right now. So, you know, they're more or less, that's a good sign because they're basically right where they should be. You know, you'd rather see that than way overperforming.
Right.
but, you know, it's just like you said, every team goes through it. And I'm not concerned. I think there are questions, legitimate ones, to be raised, but
yeah, I think there always are. And you could talk about lineup construction and things like that. Like Escobar doesn't necessarily have to be hitting leadoff, but it's what they're going to do. And in the grand scheme of things, I don't know how much it really. I mean, lineup can be tricky, and sometimes it works out, and sometimes it doesn't even matter. So I don't know. But in this case, well, it's Ned Yost.
Yeah.
He's not going to change.
Nope.
Until he has to. So, we'll just have to see how it levels out.
Indeed. So with that, I think we're going to take a small, quick break here. And when we come back, we've got some, it's kind of minor, just kind of interesting things to talk about, with the impending All-Star game and if the Royals maybe have some help waiting for them besides having to go get a trade. So stick with us through the break, and we will be right back.
So, look, you've got a ton of places in Kansas City that you can go to. And I wrote out this elaborate script that was going to convince you all why you needed to go to Kelly's. But then I thought, it doesn't need to be that complicated. What do you want? You want a good night out with friends. You want cheap drinks. You want good food. What can be better than beer and pizza? You've got Joe's in the back. You've got drink specials every night. And if you're not at Arrowhead tailgating, you got the Chiefs on Sundays. So tell me, what can be better than that? Do you need flashing lights? No, you don't need that. You don't need to spend $70 on a night out to impress a date. No, you go out to where the bartenders are going to recognize you every time you show up in an old building that has a lot of character in a great district of Kansas City. It's that simple. Don't overthink it. Just go to Kelly's Westport Inn.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks a lot for sticking with us through that quick break. We covered a lot in that first segment, so now we've got just a few items we're gonna get to before we close the show. First one we want to talk about, the Royals. No secret, you know, we talked a little bit about the offensive concerns they had in the first segment, but it's also no secret they've definitely had some issues with pitching, starting pitching in particular. Now, in see that
indeed
she knows exactly what's going on. So the starting pitching has been a little bit of an issue. It's kind of settling in now. I mean,
a little bit
as we record this on Thursday, the last two games from Guthrie and Vargas, they are pretty much what you would expect from Guthrie and Vargas. Kind of living on the edge, getting the job done, kept you in the game for an extended period of time. That's what you need from those two pitchers. And if they're your 4 and 5 and that's what they give you, you're in good shape. You're doing all right. But they haven't always been doing that this season. And that's part of the problem. So there's been a lot of talks of trades or whatever, but there's also thought that, you know, maybe the Royals, we've been hearing these same names for years now. You know, Zimmer and Manaea and Kyle Zimmer, Sean Manaea, couple of very, very talented pitchers who have yet to really show for an extended period of time what everyone thought they'd be. So Mike, kind of give a little update on just some of the recent happenings with Zimmer as he recovers from his umpteenth injury and tries to get back on track to possibly helping this team.
I don't even remember what his injury was last
shoulder
time.
Back,
it was like shoulders.
I don't know.
Head, shoulders, knees, toes.
You know,
I don't
he's
know.
Covered them all at this point, I think.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, he's been out for a lot of the last 2 years, but he started just last week a rehab assignment. Started in Lexington, which is low A, so, you know, there's your grain of salt. But, you know, apparently hit 97 his first time out, which is very encouraging. And he's thrown pretty well. I mean, he's thrown 3.2 innings so far. He did 1.2 the first time, then hit his pitch count, and 2 innings the other night. He struck out 6 guys. His last time out, he struck out 5 guys in his 2 innings, so one guy did not strike out. He's walked 2, given up 3 hits, and, you know, generally it seems encouraging because we've been waiting on Zimmer for a while, and he's been one of the top pitching prospects for a while, but you know, ever since he hit Double A, he ran into, I mean, well, basically his whole time, his whole pro career, he's had, you know, bone spurs here.
They signed him knowing he had injuries.
Yeah. And so you don't think that they're going to be this prevalent, but things just keep popping up. And so now it's a matter of staying healthy, getting the stuff back, getting back into game speed. But, I mean, it's encouraging to see him back on a mound and see some numbers to look at and keep track of. So that's a lot more than what we've had for, you know, months and months and months. So hopefully that turns into something because we've been talking about him for forever as a guy that last year we thought, hey, maybe he's going to come up and be a part of the bullpen and help out. And, you know, he never even got any, you know, I think he made like 2 starts and that was it. He shut down. So, you know, you're just not sure. I don't think he'd be starting at any point this year. But I think he could be somebody late in the year, could be in the bullpen, especially if his stuff is there, especially if he's throwing 97 with a couple of other pitches with it. You know, that's pretty significant little weapon out of the bullpen. And then you kind of look towards next year with maybe some of the Brandon Finnegan kind of approached it, you know, how he's going to be a starter and work him up. So, but I mean, I haven't heard the Royals say anything like that, but that's just my assumption. It seems like the right way to go. And it's, you know, at least he's out there, You know, we don't have to worry about, hey, is he still in extended spring training? And I'm sure he's sick of Surprise Arizona as well. So
yeah,
residence, right? Pretty much, probably rent out Jason Adams' condo out there or whatever he had. So Omar Infante just got a base hit.
Oh, hey!
Speak of the devil,
spitting in our faces as he did it.
He had about 130 feet, but hey, it counts.
Hey.
But yeah, Zimmer, I mean, you know, it's good to see that. And then, you know, side note, and this, we don't have to really get into this. Mike Montgomery made his major league debut the other night. And
oh, man, and I missed it. He went
six innings. I think he gave up one run, pretty successful. So that's cool. I mean, that's, you know, guy that we've been talking about for a long time. To see him actually get through and do something is, hey, you know, it took him a long time. So he's finally made it. But he was also part of that class with John Lamb, who has had his bout with injuries as well. He's had, you know, Tommy John surgery was one of them. His recovery was very labored, is a nice way to put it. Just never really got anything going. His velocity looked down for the last year and a half. Now, I guess the reports are that he's hitting like 92 to 90, like touching 94. He's getting the feel for the curveball and changeup back. He threw 138 innings last year for Omaha and had a sub four ERA, which isn't great, but you know, it's a step. But this year he's at 274 in Omaha, and his strikeout rate is higher. His walk rate is lower, and he's even gone like, you know, six out of his eight starts in Omaha, he's ended up with at least a strikeout per inning, or not, that's not accurate. Five strikeouts at least and five innings pitched. So, nice. You know, in six of those eight starts, he's given up two earned runs or less. So somebody who I think the Royals probably privately, you know, they probably never wrote him off, but publicly they weren't bringing him up as any of the guys that might help him. So to see him have some success, that gives you another option if something happens. Guthrie has not been good in a lot of starts. Vargas has already been on the DL. You know, who knows what Duffy's shoulder is going to do. He's at least, you know, through a simulated game today. So that's good. And so, you know, John Lamb might be a guy who makes a few starts this year if it's necessary. Chris Young is probably not going to throw 200 innings this year. So he's going to need some time off, I'm sure, at some point. So, yeah, John Lamb, if he can do it, that would be fantastic. And it's just another one of those guys. I mean, he was a top 20 overall prospect, not just in the Royal system, but overall at one point. And if he can get even like close to that, he's only 24. You know, so there's a lot of mileage. His upside's probably a little, you know, quite a bit lower than what you might have thought. Probably more of like a number four or five starter than, you know, instead of a number two guy. But,
right.
I mean, if he can come in and give you 150 innings and throw well, that's okay. You can live with that. So,
yeah, I mean, if he can give you that much with a four ERA. That's a lot of value in this league.
And league minimum. And if nothing else, if he could be Jason Vargas, you know, just be Jason Vargas with more velocity.
The good Vargas.
Right. Last night's Vargas. You can live with that. I mean, you can totally live with that. And it's just another option. It's, you know, Aaron Brooks threw well last season for Omaha, and he came up and looked okay. And Johan Pino was pretty good when he was up. And so, you know, it just gives you options. Options are not bad. And if you've got legitimate kind of major league guys who can come in and do it, well, that's a good thing. So
it's the mantra on this show. Options are always a good thing.
Options are always good. Yep. And Lorenzo Cain just hit a home run. Oh, my God.
No way. Nice. Oh, yeah, just got the notification.
Like halfway up the batter's eye. Oh, goodness gracious. Wow. So that's his fourth of the year. We're third in. I think one of my bold predictions was he might get to 15 homers. He might get close.
Needs a little bit of a hot streak once it warms up a little bit.
Yep.
Never know.
So that was good. And also Chris Medlin threw a simulated game today too. And Medlin was like universally liked when he signed with the Royals, and you know, a guy who just immense talent with Atlanta. It was just, you know, just had two Tommy John surgeries. And as a result, well, you know, you don't get a big contract for that. So he's working away. He's looking to work his way back. And so I didn't really get a full report on it, but he seemed to do well. They said that he tipped his cap to the non-existent crowd at the end of it, which he seems like he'll fit right in with the rest of these guys who are a little weird. So that could be fun, I guess. And if nothing else, hey, you know, he might be a month away still, but he could probably be a two-inning guy out of the bullpen. Like, that's okay. Yeah. I can live with that. I mean, it's just an embarrassment of riches in the bullpen right now. You've still got Lewis Coleman down in Omaha who's throwing well. And, you know, if you have Medlin come up and he's doing well, then, you know, things are okay. So I don't think he'll start, and I don't think they intended him to start, but – you know, it's maybe you never know how he's going to recover. And if he has the stamina and builds up to it, and, you know, maybe he can give you about five innings a night. So that's another guy who can come in and help out too. So it's, you know, pretty encouraging news, especially when the Royals starting rotation has not been very successful this year, other than Edson Volquez and a couple of Ventura starts.
Yes. And I think Ventura's kind of settling down to the point where, he's going to kind of get into a groove here.
Yeah.
Because his last four starts, he's gone seven innings each start.
Yeah.
And two of them, he's given up a total of one run. The other two, he's given up nine runs. But both of those were more or less like one bad inning type of thing.
One bad inning.
And then he just kind of settled in and took care of business. So
he gave
up just limit those.
Those four runs to, I forget which team it was, but he gave up four in like the second inning or something. And he cruised the rest of the game. He was really good the rest of that night. And, you know, I saw him on Sunday against the Cubs. And it was cold and the wind was coming in. So it wasn't an offensive environment, but he looked sharp. I mean, he was starting the game off 94, 95, and by the end of the game, he was throwing 98. So he was going
seven strikeouts,
something like that. Yeah, and the curveball was just nasty. I was sitting there with I was sitting there with Rainey Gisarelli, and there were a couple that just made us go ooh, because it was just like it started looking like it was going to go over the guy's head, and it broke in over the plate. And it was just like, whew.
That kid's got some talent.
Man. I think he's starting to feel it a little bit better now. And, you know, we're out of the distractions of early in the year with the cramps and the suspensions and the throwing at guys. So, you know, now they can just go and their thing.
And I do think that James Shields was a very calming influence when things like that would happen last year. And now that he's gone, I think there have been some growing pains with the staff and that they've kind of had to learn to handle it themselves. You know, I definitely, to me, this is obviously just pure conjecture at this point, but to me, Yordano Ventura looks like someone who, you know, the parents are out of town early in the season, I should say, you know, the parents are out of town. And so he's going to have a party and go crazy or something. And has had to learn how to, you know, be responsible. And these are just figurative terms. Of course, I'm not trying to say anything about his character or anything, but ultimately, I do think it's been a learning process for him to be able to figure out on his own when he has problems, how to fix them, how to maintain and channel his emotions appropriately. And, you know, that's part of being a big leaguer. That's not just a Yordano Ventura thing. So it's something that I see him channeling it a little better because I do. And some people talked on the radio and how they said that it almost looked like Yordano Ventura was kind of pouting a couple games when he had bad games because the Royals made it clear that he needed to start, you know, stop doing dumb things on the field. Right. And
he's like, but I love doing dumb things.
Yeah. say what you will, but it's at least something worth discussing. Not that we're necessarily going to discuss it a ton now, but you know, I think he's kind of getting over that hump a little bit. But as the pitching staff continues to try and work things out and the offense got off to such a great start, and as we talked about at the very beginning of the show, the fans have done such a good job. Royals are top five in attendance this year for this market is just absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And they've averaged 30,000 a night, I believe, so far. And yeah, like he's only 38,000.
Last night they were like 101 short from 30,000. I was kind of surprised. I was like, dang, it's a problem. What's the deal? It's only
crappy Wednesday night.
Wednesday.
The weather was bad, and
right,
the rain had just kind of subsided before the game. So, yeah, it's impressive what the fan base has done this year. And speaking of impressive,
never more apparent than the fact that the Royals have five guys leading All-Star voting right now.
And the top three vote getters in all of baseball, at least last I checked. Maybe have they come out with the new ones yet?
They came out with the new ones the other day, and I'm not sure who the top three were, but I think it's Perez, Kane, and Trout now.
Okay.
I think. But Moose is right there too.
Yeah.
Which is
and Perez okay. Perez is
oh, Perez is like three times as high as like the next closest guy for catcher.
Millions.
Like, and just, I mean, he's going to be the all, it's done, Matt. He's the starter. He's going to be the starter as long as he's healthy.
And this is not, when you get to that point, like, the Royals fans are stuffing the ballot box 100%, and they're doing a great
absolutely.
Job.
Absolutely.
But when you get to that point, when you're talking that many millions of votes, you know, it's also there's also a factor of people across the country with the Royals run last year have realized how talented these people are. Like you could call it last year in the ALCS that if he stayed healthy, Lorenzo Cain is going to win a Golden Glove this year. There's just no doubt about it. He's just going to win it.
Oh yeah,
he
should have won it anyway. But it was
should have won it last year.
It was a rule thing that didn't allow him to win it. So
yeah, so he's. As long as he stays healthy, I mean, he's already shown if he continues what he's done, he's definitely going to earn it as well. But it was locked up in October.
Yeah.
So people have noticed the Royals and the talent that these players have. So it's not all just Royals fans ballot box, ballot stuffing. So that's something that I feel has been really cool to see. Not only the fan. How the fans have showed up in terms of the voting, but just how it's got to be some national perspective as well. You know, I guarantee you, there's a lot of Tigers fans out there begrudgingly voting Sal Perez into the All-Star game and Eric Hosmer and so forth. Even just like I would do Miguel Cabrera.
Right. It's like I don't want to vote for him.
He was better. You know, I don't want to vote for him, but I try and run my ballot honestly. Damn it! And
I don't. I just. Though I wasn't, I was voting Johnny Giovitella over Infante. Just
there you go.
Just because I want to see Lee Judge's head explode.
How funny would that be if it was eight starting Royals and Johnny Giovitella? God,
that would be so weird. I'd be sitting 2000 me would be nodding my head, going, "Yeah, that sounds about right."
Yeah. Although I can't imagine any second baseman overtaking Jose Altuve at this point.
No, but, nor should they.
I mean, absolutely not.
He's as far ahead, I think, as Sal is. He's best second baseman in the AL right now. So,
but we need to prepare ourselves for the very, very real possibility that the Royals have, what, seven All-Stars? I mean, if Sal is a starter, Hosmer is a starter, Kane is a starter, Gordon and Moose are all starting, and then Wade Davis is going to make it by the player vote.
Right. It's
really good chance that Escobar makes it by the player vote if he doesn't get voted in by the fans, and then even if he doesn't, Ned Yost has the final say, and he's going to make sure Escobar gets on the team. So, I mean, there's a really, really good chance the Royals have seven All-Stars. Have they ever had that much? I don't even know.
In 83, they had a whole lot, but I think it was like five. So seven's crazy. I mean, it's so weird. Like
when
I heard the All-Star results come in, like the first run of them, I was like, I'm pretty sure, like I figured Sal would do well. I figured Kane would probably do pretty well. I had no idea that they would have five guys leading and like three other guys in second. And even like Gordon was a starter, you know, he's third in outfielders, and Rios was at the last update fifth, which is crazy because he's played like nine games now. So this is entirely Royals fans, and it's not like the attendance increased, so they're voting. You know, it's they want their guys in. So it's just like there's no paper ballots anymore; it's all online, And yeah, maybe there's probably some stuffing of the ballots. I mean, people are probably sitting voting from 10 different email addresses, but those are the rules, and every other team has that opportunity to do it, but Royals fans are going to put the time in to do it. It kind of reminds me of like back in 2011 when Alex Gordon was in the final vote, and he ended up winning like the text message voting portion of it, but Paul Konerko won enough of the online voting that he ended up getting the spot. But I mean, Royals fans were excited to get Alex Gordon into the game. And you know, that's where the nickname and hashtag A1 came from, because you would text A1 to 7 to whatever the number was, and it would register a vote for him in that final vote. And so that's, I mean, that's just the enthusiasm. You see, you know, the full stadiums last year in the playoff run. You look at it this year and how much attendance is out there. And when I was in Chicago on Friday, the bleachers were probably 2/3 Royals fans. And that's the Wrigley Field bleachers. You know, so, I mean, that's like hallowed ground. And it, you look at the final play on Friday, you know, I think it was a strikeout from Holland. They end up, you know, with like everybody behind home plate are like standing up as Royals fans. I mean, it was crazy. It's just like, you know, there, I saw so many people in Chicago wearing Royals stuff that there was a moment where I was walking down some street and it kind of felt like I was like in downtown KC. It was just like, oh, okay. Cause I'm not I'm not in downtown KC enough to recognize it as downtown KC. It's just right. Like, here's a city, here's neat things. And I was like, oh, there's a bunch of Royals fans, no Cubs fans really in sight. And it just felt like I was in Kansas City at that little moment, because there were so many Royals fans. I mean, it was like asking Cubs fans, I was like, do you ever see this? And they're like, no, Cardinals travel well and NL Central teams travel well, but it's not to like the sudden surge like this. And right. So, and you know, you see it in voting, you see it in attendance, you see it online, you get more national stories. I mean, it's, you know, the city's excited for it. TV ratings, I mean, they have the highest local TV ratings of anybody in baseball. It's just remarkable how quickly this team this city latched on to the baseball team. And it's frankly, it's awesome. It's the coolest thing.
Yeah, it's just fantastic. And I'm trying to look this up. I think they had 5 and 83.
I mean, I know there would be Brett.
So let's see, Willie
Frank
Wilson.
White, Wilson.
Dan Quisenberry, George Brett, Frank White. That's 4.
They've had a starting pitcher.
George Brett. Actually, did Frank White make it? Let's see here. No, he didn't make it in 83.
Huh.
So yeah, just going from this is the Royals website. It was just let's see, Willie Wilson, Dan Quisenberry, George Brett, and I think 82 might be the year you're thinking of.
Might be,
because
yeah.
Brett in 80. Okay, in 82 you had George Brett 1, Mickey Cobb 2, Dick Houser. I mean, I guess he kind of counts, like Ned Yost counts, but. So let's see, that's 2 in 82. Hal McRae in 82 makes 3. Let's see, Dan Quisenberry makes 4. And Frank White makes 5. Willie Wilson makes 6. So in 1982, they had 6. So that appears to be the most. So yeah, they could tie or eclipse that this year, which would just be phenomenal.
Yeah, and it's probably going to end up, if it's like 5 or 6 guys from the Royals are starters, it's probably going to result in some changes to the voting.
Yeah.
Like what comes up is like, I don't know what year, if it was like 74 or 75 or some year, but the Reds fans really stuffed the ballot box. And like 8 of the 9 starters were Reds players. The only one who wasn't was Stan Musial or something.
Wow.
And it's just like, you know, that's over like, you know, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays. So this is probably like early 70s, late 60s.
Right.
So, I mean, that, yeah, I mean, I get it. I get that it's like, okay, this guy or that guy probably deserved it. I mean, I wouldn't sit there and say that Kendrys Morales is more deserving to start the All-Star game than Nelson Cruz at DH. But it's not like it's, you know, it's not like when Eric Sogard almost won face of the MLB over like David Wright or Andrew McCutchen or whoever he was against. You know, it's like, okay, it's like these are legitimate guys at those positions. Moose is leading in a lot of things at third base. Escobar has been playing well at shortstop, and shortstop is kind of weak. You know, Hosmer's been right up there, you know, really well with Miguel Cabrera. Kane has been good. Gordon's been pretty good. You know, so it's not crazy. These guys are deserving to be up there. Like, I would say a lot of these guys are top three type guys at each position, at least by their performance. So, I mean,
yep.
While it's not, you know, while it is stuffing the box, it's still like, one, part of the rules, and two, they're not deserving. So yeah. Let's do it.
you can draw the line at Omar Infante. He's like second base, yeah. I think.
That so should not be happening.
That's the covered. Scenario where you say, okay, this Hold is ridiculous. But it is, and that's the best thing for Lorenzo Cain, Hosmer, all those to be starters. They're in the conversation. Even if you don't think they should actually win and it's royal stuff in the box, they're legitimately should be considered, even if you just had a different method of determining who was the starters. So, you know, like I said, it's not a show.
You get the, you know, the Royals fans who are excited, but you also get just other fans of other teams who are kind of looking at it, and maybe they don't want to vote for Cabrera, and they see Hosmer, and they say, yeah, he's a fine alternative. You know, or they don't want to put in Mark Teixeira or something. You know, they don't want to vote for those guys who have always been in it. You know, they saw this team last year who, you know, turned it on at the right time and were really exciting. And there was even, I think Alex Gordon said something to one reporter. He was like, well, we got in all those fights early, and so people got to see us more on SportsCenter. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, that's still coverage. It's, you know, gets people's names in there, I guess. So, but all in all, this is primarily driven by Kansas City excitement. And you know, there's 30-20, they're in first place. They're losing tonight, but you know, could still turn around. They're playing pretty well, other than a few time, you know, few rough games on offense. If that turns around and the pitching improves, they're already far ahead of Detroit at this point. You know, Detroit, I don't know what happened to them this last week, but you know, there's that. They're not really that scary right now. And Minnesota's not going to win for, you know, they're not going to win the division. They're not going to win a playoff spot. Let's not be crazy. No.
Like we said before, there's a real strong 2003 Royals vibe coming from the Twins right now.
It's exactly what they're going to be. They're just not, and I don't think that, I think they know it too. Like I saw
Mike Pelfrey out there giving them, mm-hmm. you know, that's just not going to continue.
Yeah, and I saw a reporter from them, you know, saying, like, responding to a fan question, would they go after a guy like Johnny Cueto or Cole Hamels or whatever? And he was like, they're really not looking at that. Like, you know, I think they know that we're not going to go throw in, you know, Byron Buxton at teams to try to get
give up him.
You're not going to do that. Cueto? Yeah, it's not going to. It's not going to happen. They're going to just let it be, and. You know, unless something really crazy happens, which I guess is possible, but I just don't see it. They've got 4 months to go to come back to reality, and they're going to. So if the Royals can keep playing ahead of Detroit, well, then, I mean, that really limits your main competition to, like, Cleveland in the division, and Cleveland isn't that scary. Their pitching's really, really good, starting pitching particularly, but, you know, they're not that scary. The Royals have handled them okay this year so far. So, I mean, that's kind of how the division looks to shape up. I mean, the Royals have an opportunity to do something. They just have to keep playing well. And, you know, that's just going to make it even more exciting to go to the ballpark. I mean, you're going to be looking at, like, August games that are just sellouts for a whole week. It's just going to be awesome. They're going to shatter the attendance record if they keep playing like this. So,
for sure.
I mean, it's just going to be a heck of a summer. So
absolutely.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yep. And with that, I think we'll leave you this evening or morning or daytime or whenever you're listening to this podcast through the magic of the interwebs podcasting.
The interwebs are great.
Interwebs are fantastic. Yes. So at this point, it's hard for me to make promises. I'm not sure when the next time we'll be able to record. Again, we always do strive to have a weekly show, but as we've obviously proven, things get in the way. Yep. So we're going to try and keep it going here as much as we can. So we're definitely not abandoning the show. So stick with us. We'll be around. And it's just hopefully things kind of settle down for both Mike and myself, and we can pound out some more shows for you, because there's no shortage of things to talk about here in Royals Kingdom, if
absolutely
you will.
Absolutely not.
So thank you all very, very much for listening. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. For Michael Engel, I am your host, Jeff Herr. Thanks for stopping by, and as always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.